Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening. November 17, 2021. Welcome to the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight that's going on inside me, and it's a terrible fight. It's between two wolves. One wolf is full of anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, bunch of lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, it's empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. This same fight is going on inside you and in every other person too." The grandson sat there, he thought about it for a minute, and he asked his grandfather, "Well, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the one you feed."
Yeah.
All right. Hey, all right. Already hear the chuckles in the background. Good evening. Good afternoon or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Okay, namaste, hola, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, live Wednesday now, Wednesdays on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Will Green. Holding down just a very small half of our hosting duties here on our show, like we do every week. Holding down the other half, the Lions historian, my best friend, my dad, Bill Green. Wake up, gosh darn it.
You're hilarious, man. What's up, Wilfredo? Just to be sure that everybody knows, you know, Wilfredo is not his real name, y'all. It's just what I call him, because that's what my brother used to call, my oldest brother used to call me Wilfredo, so it got handed down to him. And since I doubt if I'm going to have, you know, any more offspring, so he's not going to have, you know, any other brothers, it looks like he's going to have an offspring other than the one he has, whose name is Jackson. He's going to have a William Jr., or the third, rather, so he can call him Wilfredo. But until then, what's up, Wilfredo?
Wow, yeah. Well, there it is. The story of Wilfredo.
Story of him. Right on, man. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, doing great. Wednesdays now, feeling good. You know, still got the jitters, the willies. You know,
yeah.
But I think that happens.
The Wilfredos, you mean.
The Wilfredos, the Willie Wilfredos. But, you know, that happens about every weekend.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah. But no, doing good. You know, looking forward to another show with you.
Now another rousing event, huh?
Okay. Yeah, with the
I'll behave myself this week.
Yeah, well, we'll see, and we'll see how it goes. we'll see. But before we begin, ladies and gentlemen, we just want to let you know, remind you of a few things here before we get the ball rolling. Like we do every week, every show, whether it's this show or Write Your Own Book Club, hint, that might be coming back. Before we begin, just remember to grab a pen or paper, pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, I don't know, back of an envelope. You know, you may have some questions, comments. You may learn something from us. You may have something to share with the audience as well. So we want to make sure you don't forget. Here on the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, we have a motto. I just want to make sure that we overemphasize it. Why use 100 words when 1,000 words would do? That's one of our mottos here. But seriously, we just want to make sure you don't forget it. Again, if there's something you might catch from us, you know, write it down and keep it for yourself as well. Reminder number two, if you are online on the Blog Talk Radio site, there is a chat room that is open. Now, if you're trying to access the chat room, you may not be able to because you don't have a Blog Talk Radio account. You can set it up for free. Nobody's been charged by accident. You can just go in there and select free, and you won't be charged, but you know you got to still give a credit card number. But you can engage with us in the chat room. Or the third way, you can engage with us because this isn't a normal podcast here. You're not just going to listen to two guys just banter back and forth like a phone call, though sometimes it may get like that, but that's not always our intention. The third piece, though, is that, you know, we do have a phone line available for you to engage with us as well. For those that are listening online, or if you just want to write it down again, our number is 516-453-6094. That's 516-453-6094. And if you're ready to jump in with us, just press 1 in your keypad. Excuse me. And that'll light your number up in our queue. And that'll let us know that you'd like to chime in or maybe ask a question or just say, oh, what's up? Just make sure we stay on topic, you know, what's the present topic of discussion. We just like to make sure we let you know ahead of time. As Dad says, I try to be called a friendly. I'm not going to speak for my father. I'll let him chime in on that. But please give us a call. You know, you're always more than welcome. See, I remembered this time, Dad. I think those are the reminders. I've been doing my homework. I don't know if Dad is still there or not.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, I had just muted for a second. Yeah, outstanding, man. You know. Yeah, you did good.
I did.
You nailed them all. Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, just so y'all know, Will is very caller friendly. I tend to be somewhat controversial. Maybe that's a good word to use, but you know, the more colloquial phrase would be, I'm the asshole. You know, I there's certain triggers I have, you know, buzzwords that spin me out, and I'm sorry, I apologize ahead of time, everyone. I'm still working on restraint. One of the things is Trump. Even me saying it, I feel myself getting agitated. So, you know, I'll I'll do everything I can to maintain a level of cool. And Cousin Deacon Art, if you're listening, I apologize, you know, from last week. And is the invitation still open to come to your house anytime? Okay, man, that's about it. You know, let me ease up off the gas.
I was not expecting that, but that was cool though. Yeah. So yeah, those are our reminders. It's been another week, right? You know, last week was 7 days. It's only 44 days left till the end of the year.
And that's something, man.
That's it. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. 44 days left. But yeah, this is second week back, new season. Got to get used to doing it on Wednesdays. You know, I like Thursdays only because, you know, Wednesdays, and I like Wednesdays, don't get me wrong, but Thursdays I got to cheat a little bit and put my research off another day, you know. But Wednesday keeps me on top of things. So.
We can always switch back to Thursday.
No.
Just let me know before I go join this bowling league, which I got.
No, you got Thursdays, man. Stay with it. Stay committed.
Right,
I want
cool.
you to get back in them lanes too. So,
man. Hey, yeah, that was pretty. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What?
No, that was pretty. What? Go ahead.
I was gonna say that was pretty cool of you to post that, I don't even know if you post that picture of the ring. That was unexpected, man. That kind of swelled my chest a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And you're doing a great job taking care of it, man.
So for those that don't know, on December 30th, 1975, my dad bowled a perfect game, a 300, all strikes, right? And so we got to get up. Oh, man. Right. Wait a minute. I got to get back to that. I got to get used to that.
Man, you're right, man.
My fault, man. I missed my key on that one. But so yeah, he got a ring. He got the 10th pin, the actual pin itself, and some other stuff. But I still got his ring.
Yeah.
So, you know, yesterday you were telling me to go bowling. And mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to. I stopped by my mom's house to pick up some things. And then I got to cleaning up because she wasn't there. So I had an opportunity to clean up some things and pick up some stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, get it done.
Yeah, well, it's always more important, you know, to check in with your mom anyway. You know, bowling can always.
Bowling can wait. So checking in with her and cleaned up a little bit. She got back. But, you know, the ring's been over there. So I'm like, oh, man, yeah, let me send you that picture.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about bowling, too, and then the ring comes up again. So, of course, I feel a little, I've got some mixed feelings about it. It's great to see it, but I tried to put it on my finger, and it don't fit on the fingers that it used to fit anymore.
Yeah, that's always a bad sign.
It fit the pinky finger. That was it. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I say? That's something you go through. I don't have to worry about it, you know. I don't even have to trip. I would imagine that it would be a tight squeeze, you know, for me as well. Or, you know, I have, you know, small hands, so it might be able to work its way in. But I had small hands when it was sized. So if my hands have stayed, you know, proportion to the rest of my body, it'd probably be a tight squeeze for me too. But anyway, thank you. You know, move on away from that. But thank you. One last thing. Thank you, man, for taking well. Just, you know, a little bit more of the history of it. There was a time when I hit some hard times and I pawned the ring. And it took a while to find, Will actually finally rescued it for me out of hock. And I thought, you know, I can't always count on that, him to come gallop into my rescue every time. So I asked Will to keep it for me, safekeeping. And you've had it now for what, about 10 years?
Yeah, has it been 10 years already? Wow.
It very, I mean, it may be 9, you know,
no,
but it's been
close to 10.
I think it's been about 10 years, man.
At least
but anyway, the point is,
Yeah.
Well, it's been more than seven because I've been here seven, mm-hmm. you know, so and past seven. So anyway, the point is, thank you for taking such well care of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would have kept your old Chatham Bowl jacket if it fit. I figured I'd get that.
Well, I tried it on not too long ago, and I had the experience you're having with the rain. It's like, man, I used to be able to get in this. He's kidding me. This is his son's jacket. Why are you giving this to me? And the worst part about it, it was a pullover. Man, I almost hung myself trying to get that thing off. My son figured out the devious way to do me in. You know, I know you got to do that. You can have the ring.
Wow.
Hey, okay, let me stop, man.
You're trying to make it look like an accident. No doubt.
Yeah, funny guy, man. Okay, all right. Enough of the ring. You know, we're going to look up. It's going to be 9 o'clock, man. Still talking about the ring.
Yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, welcome. But that's what I was going to say.
Amen.
That you bowled a perfect game. I'm proud of it. You know, it's legacy, if you will. You know.
Yeah. I'm total agreement.
So last week, it was really good getting back on the air with you again. As like I said, dusting off the mics and everything, kind of figure out our cadence, get back in the flow, shaking off the willies. Both Willies got the Willies. yeah, I know. I got to stop doing that. But it was a really good show. And ladies and gentlemen, our shows are saved and archived, not only on Blog Talk Radio site, but on pretty much probably on whatever format you listen to podcasting, Apple, Google, Spotify. The Greenhouse Effect is there. So if you ever want to figure out which one, let me know. I'll send you the link. But we are available on your favorite listening channels. So last week we were talking a little bit about what you were commenting on, feeling like a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably go into more detail on where we're getting at, but I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with some of the issues of being an African-American, of being in America but not feeling like you're American, you know, not really having that sense of belonging. And so we were about to talk about this Netflix movie, The Harder They Fall, that's on Netflix, but we didn't really get a chance to talk about it last week. So we thought it'd be cool to just bring it up this week and kind of look at the movie The Harder They Fall, as we mentioned in the description of the show today, and talk about the plight and accomplishments of being Black in Hollywood. The one thing that I love about doing this show with my dad is that we have this opportunity to bridge these generational gaps, you know, and provide perspectives from his generation, of his time growing up to now, and also looking at my influences and the differences of our and similarities of our generations and things like that. So The Harder They Fall is really cool, you know, because, you know, I remember growing up, you know, it was either baseball, it was Western movies or Army flicks, you know,
mm-hmm.
those are the, you know, and bowling, of course. Those were the three things that I always remember growing up with you. You know, that was one of the Western, it was one of those three things that on TV, you know, that we automatically just jailed and bonded real quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, seeing this movie, you know, I was really curious and it really brought back some emotions and stuff like that, just seeing our own people in a Western movie, thinking about those times when I grew up and all I saw was, you know, white guys doing their thing, you know, and usually you saw supposedly Indians and Mexicans and Spaniards, you know, but they were probably played by white people also.
You know, mostly, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you didn't see a lot of Asian actors.
Rarely.
Thank you. rarely saw any Asian actors. You definitely didn't see any black actors in most of these Westerners that, you know, that you pretty much grew up on, you know, and that you passed down to me. So, you know, so I just thought, you know, we both thought that it'd be cool to talk about the show, about the movie, and some other stuff. I'm kind of drifting a little bit, like I said, because, you know, it brought something. It was really cool. And it was very, you know, you talk a lot about, like, Black Panther. We talk about Black Panther and the example of that movie. And, you know, looking at comic books and, again, the white guys always being the heroes. You know, it's rare to see something that showed us in these particular parts that we normally just saw that was made for white male America. Am I hitting that?
Well, yeah, it was produced by Hollywood, and Hollywood was always reflective of the values of America, which was, you know, white, you know, and even Jeff Chandler, Chuck Connors, Burt Lancaster, all white actors who, you know, depicted various kind of Indian American chiefs. And, you know, all three had facial features that they could get away with, you know, unlike, you know, a white dude playing Michael Jackson. I just wanted to sneak that in.
Wow.
So, you know, and but when that's what you're raised on, that's what one like myself becomes, you know, conditioned to accept. And that's, you know, whether it was, there I go with you knows again, right? Whether it was John Wayne or all the other named actors of the time, Hollywood built its whole mystique around white male and female, white female actors. And Halle Berry told me, I caught myself paying a compliment to her once and acknowledging what I felt, you know, she was a very, very effective African-American female actress. And before I could even do my rap, you know, she corrected me right away. She said, I'm not an actress. I'm an actor. And I thought, you know, I'll never forget that. And definitely accepted the critique or the criticism. You know, I guess there's some degree of disparaging context to suggest actress means female, actor means male. Let's not differentiate between the two. Let's be clear that we're in the same field of actor.
Right.
So the idea being, as we were talking about last week, that Hollywood has pretty much had its own say about what images and how they're going to be depicted on the big screen. And with no competitors, nothing to prevent them from doing that, they pretty much have had you know, their own fair run about showing American values and through their lens, literally, you know, through their lens. And the disparity speaks for itself. So that's, you know, pretty much what we were talking about last week, wanting to set up The Harder They Fall. But, of course, I had to take the dirt road, right? And we wound up getting into American politics, which goes hand in hand, but the topic really wasn't supposed to be. It's just, you know, you asked me earlier today when we were laying out our approach, our agenda, our slate, if there was any things that I wanted to add to tonight's list of topics. And it's like I said to you, I'm afraid to turn on the TV. I'm afraid to turn on the news, which I do every day, because that's what I did last week. And it was that day right before the show, and so much was happening, you know, that is what's going on with America. And the one, to me, ties in with the other, American politics and the distortion of American history and the lack of clarity and positivity surrounding Black history as depicted on the screens leaves a hole in the truth. And the harder they fall, which I'm not going to get into, that's a topic reserved for the top dog, you know, Wilfredo, you know, to me had just such a artistic way of presenting the obvious, but yet not in a in your face kind of way, because it was really, to me, Black entertainment in a way that, you know, I, as far as what, and you know, I'm a Western dog, you know, as far as you know, Westerns are concerned, man, it was I had to just get over the hump of having something shown that I was so unfamiliar with. I had to get used to the characters because I wasn't used to seeing them. So let me just, I hope I filled in the gap there and didn't take us too much off stride.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I just wanted to get some, some insight in, if you will, as far as how we kind of came about bringing up the topic for this week. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go on, man.
No, I was just going to say, you know, because we're just trying to, you know. We're trying.
I'm struggling over here.
No, that's me. That's me, too. You know, so we're trying to get our, like I said earlier, our cadence back. We're trying to get our timing. You know, it's like, it's amazing how it seems like the words come so easy, you know, from listening to the previous shows, the older shows, looking at my notes, and then you get back in the swing of things. It's like, oh, what's that word again? What's that word again?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, just getting our timing right, our vocabulary, mm-hmm. you know, tight again. I just thought it'd be a good way to try something different and just talk about why we were breaking up the topic for this week. So there we are.
So let's get into it, man. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's get into it.
You know? Right. So Netflix just recently had this movie come out, The Harder They Fall. And this was, it was highly anticipated, if you will. And it was a Western movie. And this kind of put a different twist on what we're used to. And I say what we're used to, what we're pretty much used to in a lot of movies set in the Western times, is that, again, it's pretty much whitewashed. We can even say, I would say it's like the manifest destiny of Hollywood. You know, everything is whitewashed and they tell the story they wouldn't want to tell it. I had to throw in that little bit of manifest destiny. That's all that was. this is different because here you have a story that's focused around Black actors and these characters that these actors portray. And we're not going to get in too much about, I hope we don't give any spoilers that most of you have seen the movie, but we're not going to really get too much into the story itself. But what's interesting is, like Black Panther, it provided an opportunity for us to see a movie that we normally don't see. It gives us a visualization of things that were possible and not just something that was forced for us to believe in. It changes these preconceptions. Of just the West is just full of all these white people and Indians and Spaniards and Mexicans, that it was Black people. So it's like, no, Black people weren't in America at that time, but we were there. And a lot of that energy in these discussions and stuff has been absent. So this movie, it changes these preconceptions and it provides a different perspective on how this time frame should be viewed. And so, you know, Westerners usually, what's the time frame usually, Dad? Like the mid 1800s to the early 1900s?
No, really. But all of the 19th century, you know, so that's all of the 1800s. and even into the 18th century, the 1700s. That's all, you know, like even though it's east, it's still east heading west. So the theme of anything, well, you know, fighting Indians is a western theme, even if it's dealing with the Mohawks or the Hurons or the dominant Indian tribes, the Fox, or the dominant Indian tribes along the eastern coast. It's Indian, so Indians just become the quintessential bad guy, you know, throughout the course of American history, going east to west. You use the word manifest destiny. So it's this inherent right to take the land from a people that wasn't doing anything with the land. You know, mm-hmm. that whole idea when it comes to Indian Wars. So the Indian Wars pretty much tracks the history of the West. So we're getting into the 1700s. And, yeah, bleeding on off into the 20th century or the early 1900s. Really kind of creeping up even to the mid-1900s. You know, it's just that the fight was taken to the White House as opposed to Indian lands, which still goes on today. So, but yeah, the West is, you know, all about the 1800s. Mm-hmm. You know, that, and I like what you said, you know, if I can just add a little bit to it,
yes,
not to take away from anything said, it's not so much maybe that people were saying that black people weren't even in America then, but then what they're saying is free black people weren't in America then, you know, mm-hmm. So there's no way that free black people could have been a part of the history of the old West. I just wanted to just add that little part to it, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, black folks were busy being nothing but slaves until 1963.
Right. Right. Now, and, you know, there might be some people like, oh, well, this is just a movie. They're just talking about a movie or something like that. But,
yeah, true.
You know, I feel that there is a need to look at it and to talk about it. From, you know, I like, well, first of all, let me just say, I enjoyed the movie. You know, of course, there were some things that I questioned or some things that really didn't agree with me. But, you know, what I wanted this show to be about was the things that we've noticed of people who do enjoy the movie and those who didn't enjoy the movie, because I feel like there's something that's a little bit more important than this just being a piece of entertainment or it's just another movie. I kind of feel like it's not just another movie, similar to how like Black Panther wasn't really just another movie. Almost like, you know, Obama just wasn't another president. You know, again, it's being able to actually see things and the possibilities for what they are. You know, it's you know, it's true that a black person can be the hero in a movie. You know, yes, it's true that they had free black Americans living in the West that had their own towns. You know, that they were as good of a cowboy as those usual cowboys that we see in the movies, that they, you know, that Bass Reeves was the Long Ranger, and that the Long Ranger wasn't about this white guy and his sidekick Tonto. You know, that very similar to the things that we've talked about on previous shows. What were you about to say, Dan?
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Are you hitting your table, or is that just a sound problem that we're having?
What does it sound like?
It sounds like when you're making a point, you're hitting the table, you know?
Know,
so maybe it's just another typical issue we're having with audio. That's okay. Go ahead, man.
I may be hitting the table. I don't know. I could be clicking the pen too. I forget this microphone's a little bit more sensitive. So, you know, using different equipment, my apologies. I'll sit at the desk like a good boy and just keep my hands folded.
Well, you know, I was just telling that, you know, just so it doesn't distract the listener. But, you know, sticking with your point, you know, the whether, you know, and it is a very violent movie. So if a person doesn't like violence in their movies, they're not going to like this regardless of who's acting in it, you know. And it's an extremely violent movie, you know, by today's standards. It equals anything Quentin Tarantino ever put on the screen, you know. And so I could understand a person having issues with the violence. But I think you were also getting to another point about what it depicted historically. So let me just ease off and ease out of that. I think that's where you were heading, right?
I was just, touching on when we, just looking at all of our shows and the connection to the things that I think keep us consistent with all of our shows is the theme of, again, talking about having those tough discussions, those difficult conversations, but just acknowledging and the show gives a voice. You know, we give a different kind of voice. And one of the things that's consistent about our voice is that we talk about American history. And we talk about the things that, hasn't been properly discussed or given.
Or shown.
So, or shown. Yeah. Thank you. I'm already thinking about what you were talking about. We talked about what you're talking about. We talking about. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We were talking about with Training Day, with Muscle Minnows, you know, and understanding that there are things that have occurred that have affected us today. There's things that affected, that's happened in the past that's affected us today. And even in something like a movie like They Heart or They Fall, it's interesting how these things that were set up in the past still affect us today. And I feel like that, you know, and we'll get more into that as we go on through the show later on tonight. What else did you have to add on to that, Dad?
Well, you know, it just tracks what you're saying. You know, it's a matter of conditioning. And for me, maybe a little bit more extreme than for you, you know, being, a few years older than you, quite a few.
Just a few.
The conditioning has been more related to a time of severe racism, you know, in this country. I mean, we still feel the severity of it, no question about it today, but the extreme of it at the time, I was born in 47. It's right at the hub of violence toward Black America as a whole, not toward Black individuals, you know, as males, but and females, as we outlined in the show. But America as a whole was a very acceptable of the themes of post-slavery not being an acceptable form of American value. So even though we had the Emancipation Proclamation signed in 1865, 1863, and all of the issues that stemmed from that was a backlash, you know, of resentments even from having lost the war that robbed the people of its culture, which a main part of its culture and its productivity had to do with slave labor. These themes, you know, depicted throughout the history of the movies were always reflective of the dominant America values, which was white. So how do you show the depiction of a history that denies a people of its place in the movie? Well, by denying a people its place in the movie. And that keeps the history intact. Well, there maybe were a few movies that came along, maybe that sympathized with the Indians, but it was always from a white perspective, the sympathy was. It was never from a Native American perspective. And, you know, you see a lot of slave movies that always, pretty much, the dominant parts of it carry, you know, the white themes of being pro-Black, but never the Black themes of being pro-Black from a Black perspective. And that's why I have such issues with, you know, the movie industry today. But I didn't know the difference coming up, because there was never this difference coming up. It was always the same thing, always the same propaganda, and it was always consistent with the same history I was being taught in the schools. So not knowing that there was any other history, because there was no other history being taught, you know, it was no different for me being a young black boy as it would be for a Native American child going to a European school and being taught how to be European in America. That's pretty much what I was taught, how to be European in America. You know, not how to be black, but how to be European and learn how to calm or even tame my black, you know. And today where I didn't, well, today where it rakes the hair on the back of my neck, growing up, it didn't. To hear Native Americans today being referred to in movies as being, oh, that's a good Indian, he's tame. You know, growing up, it's like, well, that's, you know, that was just what Indians were, because they were the bad guys. But hearing it now, the same movies, it's like, man, to think I didn't find that offensive when I was 11. And so fast forward to a movie like The Harder They Fall, right? And you have named actors in this movie. And like Brenda, you know, my sister-in-law pointed out, you know, Jay-Z, you know, having to do with the production of it, you know, not to mention your girl, name escapes me right now, having a lot to do with the production of it. And then the actors themselves, who are known for other roles, seeing all of them brought together in this one thing, to me, it was historical. You know, historical, not hysterical, historical, you know, by its own right. You know, it just seemed like a precedent that had never really been achieved had been set. So, okay, fine, what, great. Yeah, so what? Let's get into the critical part of the critique of the movie itself. Well, okay. But let's not lose sight of the historical opportunity that what should have been happening in the 60s is only just now happening, you know, 60 years later, helping, presenting different venues that allow black actors or black people in the movie industry itself begin to develop their craft, whether it be acting, whether it be directing, whether it be producing, whether it be directing, whether it be learning how to do movies, creating, you know, screenwriting, you know, all the things that should have really just reached a crescendo in the 60s instead of being shut down are now being reborn in the 21st century. And I personally find it, you know, exciting. Yeah. You know, I find that to be more of a statement of hope than what's coming out of Congress right now. You know, I think it's important to make a separation of the two for its own reasons. If for no other reason, I think that's where the real hope lies, you know, in what we're being entertained by. Since entertainment has been such an important part of the black culture anyway, you know, whether it be sports, whether it be movies, whether it be song, you know, to me it's exciting to that's what Black Panther did for me, to see something on the screen that everybody's seeing like they are used to seeing with other people in lead roles. So let me back off, man. Hopefully that served a purpose, all that rambling I just did.
Yeah, I mean, even during slavery times, even through what's considered as entertainment, let's say, you know, singing and dancing, those were the opportunities that...
And acting,
that's when information and history was passed down. That's when they were able to share stories, you know, through song, right?
But you gotta see. Here's the thing: what what gets lost, and this is what gets lost in the translation of history, is assuming certain things were more readily available in like the early 1900s, like singing and performing. No, it's the same thing 100 years later, that the powers that be dictate what you're going to be allowed to do. And if you're not a part of the powers that be, you don't get to dictate what you're going to be allowed to do. So we had to take what was available, but we had to take what was available in competition, because that was not the mood of Hollywood, you know, of the music industry, of performances on Broadway, or whatever you want to, throw the dart at the board. All these themes that were the dominant cultures, rite of passage, was always a battle and still is a battle. So that's why, to me, it's exciting to see enough people come together with enough capital to once again take a stab at presenting something that is quite different than what America is used to seeing. It's a shock treatment almost. It's shock therapy almost. And I can understand, even for Black folks, how the shock can be unsettling for, you know, many of us. Yeah. Because we're so used to seeing other people on the stage, other people performing, other people, step away from sports for a second, other people performing in all of the other forms of entertainment. We're so used to seeing them live out our dreams. We're so used to fantasizing what we're seeing them do. We've gotten so conditioned to that when we see it up close and personal, Black folks doing it, it's like, hey, that's not, that can't be authentic. that can't be what it really is. That's Black people doing that. Yeah, I'm used to seeing, the way white folks do it. So we accept certain limitations because of the repetitive theme of appreciation and being entertained. It's one of the great luxuries of going to the movies when I was growing up. We had a lot of movie theaters right in the neighborhood, that I grew up in. Three of them. Four if you included, the one that was the home of the rats. That's what we call the Ark. Everything was in walking distance, of course, because nobody really had a car. So that was the one outlet we always had where we could go to the movies. And we didn't care what was on the screen. It was the fact that we could be entertained for half the day, And since we were, my generation were, outside creatures. There was no anything else. Entertainment was all leaving the house, because the TV was, that was totally run by adults. So our entertainment was, our joy was found when we left the house, whether it was playing games in the streets, but having a chance to go to the movies once or twice or three times, sometimes a month. Oh man, that was it. I saw movies that I totally didn't understand, but I didn't care, because it's magic in sitting in front of that screen eating popcorn and drinking 7-Up. So that was the consistency of it. That was like the dope that went with the entertainment. I'm going to the lobby and getting all the snacks and then just sitting there enjoying the snacks, so we were just being entertained by whatever was on the screen. But you can bet what was on the screen was always something that was white as far as values, as far as attitudes, as far as beliefs. Yeah. Go ahead, man.
Yeah. So I don't think it was this director's intention to spark controversy, but then who knows? You know how things go when you present it to people. You can't please everybody. James Samuel is a director. He's not American. He's from Great Britain. So, right there, there's a problem. So he doesn't have the capability to fully grasp. I'm being facetious here. It's just one of the many skeptical comments that were made about the movie. But because he was from Great Britain, then that took away his ability to, you know, fully grasp the presenting the Western movie itself. But anyway.
What, presenting the Western movie in the way that America's used to seeing it depicted? Is that what you're saying? So he couldn't have known what he was doing by putting something on the screen that wasn't consistent with what America was used to seeing when it came to the sovereign state of Westerns?
Yeah.
Is that what the criticism was by him being? So does that same criticism extend itself to other British actors who play key roles in American movies, like my man who played Martin Luther King Jr., my boy who played Fred Hampton, or the dude who I like to call Chipotle, who starred in 12 Years a Slave? You know, I mean, you know, British actors have found an outlet in America, just like many black actors found an outlet overseas. So that's one of the criticisms, right, that this cat couldn't know what he was doing because he wasn't of American upbringing. He doesn't have the same conditioning. You know, is that what, you know, is that what you're saying, that the criticism was that he's not depicting of Westerns the way we're used to seeing Clint Eastwood and John Wayne and all the rest of what's my short dude's name? Alan Ladd, all the Western heroes we're used to seeing, that he's put the wrong spin on it because he's from Great Britain? Is that kind of consistent with how you heard the criticisms?
That's kind of consistent. I don't have it verbatim, but that was
no, of course not.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that is what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's the something like that. You know, I mean, whether it's coming from black folks or white folks, the criticism is going to come from what we're used to. I mean, I get that, you know, but that's kind of consistent with the criticisms anyway, right? We criticize something that we don't see our values reflected in, whatever those values may be. So if I'm used to seeing things one way and then somebody comes along and they show things another way, I'm right away going to attack the other way when it's not consistent with what I'm comfortable with. Why would the movies be any different? You know, I mean, that's been the struggle of black Americans throughout history anyway. You know, if we show up any way other than white in what we do, I mean, that's just the nature of a distortion of history as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I feel you. I think I do. I hope I'm not, you know, overstepping my bounds here.
No, it was a question of context. You know,
yeah.
that was the main. It was just
context.
Yeah.
Right on.
But you know, I you know, it being a period piece, as they call it, a period piece,
mm-hmm.
because you're talking about history, the period of history. A lot of people were looking for more consistency as far as the characters
right.
they were portraying, you know, more about the stories of these characters that was more accurate than what was presented. I think that's where a lot of the criticism came from. But what I really enjoy about it, and even the fact that there is criticism and controversy and this discussion even tonight, is that one, that this conversation, that these conversations are taking place, because what happens is it forces us to look up these people. They're like, what
yeah,
do you mean?
How about that?
You know, what do you mean yeah. that Idris Elba's character died at a young age in real life? You know, that he wasn't whatever Idris's age is. You know, you know, what do you mean that Cherokee Bill was multiracial, you know, but it forces you to look up these guys and these women, these people in history, in a history that we really don't know about. And even through Hollywood and through all of our entertainment, technically we didn't know they existed. We didn't know they existed, except maybe Bass Reeves, You know, I didn't know who Nat Love was, you know, till I saw the movie, and then I was forced to research and find out exactly who this guy was. So I just saying that, and one of the reasons, again, for doing the show tonight was because it forces us to do this and to look this up, and actually, through all the controversy and disappointment, it actually helps and adds knowledge to our history. You there with
me? Yeah, right. Yeah, but, you know, not but, again, and not, you know, it's still, I'm trying to be sure I'm following you. I don't want to sound like I'm stepping on your toes or discounting what you're saying. It's always, in my estimation, based on my few years of being, you know, in this part of the earth, it's been a consistent challenge to figure out just who I am. And I only have the things available to me to help me answer that question of just who I am. But I cannot answer that question if I don't see who I am everywhere I look. I'm left with who you say I am. And if I'm left with who you say I am, then I'm left with an invisible man trying to do what is acceptable to become visible means having to distort who I really am to fit in. So what we've gotten all my life, well, for the majority of my life, my formulative life, and my time spent in impressions of my life, it's always been black folks being a parenthesis. Oh yeah, by the way, or this is really the best you're going to get, so you better take this while you can. So to see a Stepin Fetchit or Hattie McDaniel or Butterfly McQueen, you know, or Rochester, you know, being limited to these stereotype roles, if that's all people are seeing, they think these roles are consistent with history. And me watching the same movies everybody else is watching, have no recourse, have no other option but to assume it must be accurate since this is what Hollywood is putting out there and no one's arguing the point. You know, yeah, there was an upsurge in the 60s, and you know, but that upsurge had a backlash. In the if I may, you mind if I just take a minute to just do this?
Yeah, go ahead.
In the 60s, you know, the upheaval, or the uproar in demanding an equal part of movies being depicted on the silver screen and even on the small screen TV did in the 60s produce a lot of black themed movies and black actors, male and female, expanding on the roles that they had not been allowed to play, but still being shown behind the time. And the behind the time is what has consistency of the time we're living in today. We're still behind the time. So we're getting a late review of the things that should have always been a part of our awareness. You should not be finding out the same things I'm just finding out. I should have been able to say to you that, yeah, this is how it was back then. You know, not me and you finding out the same thing and then doing our research for accuracy's sake and then having a discussion like tonight about how accurate something was as far as people depicting certain roles. That shouldn't be a conversation. That should be a conversation that you and your homies are having. That shouldn't be a conversation that me and my homies and you and your homies are having at the same time. We should have been able to outgrow the sensitivity around criticism by now. But because that gap had not been bridged and this sudden awareness is unfolding in front of us all at the same time, we haven't perfected the dialogue yet to be critical. You know, because I don't know about you, I take the criticism from black folk about a movie like The Harder They Fall. I take it personal. Yeah, I want the person who criticizes to explain to me, what are they criticizing? Are they criticizing the fact that it was a British director? Are they criticizing the fact that Idris Elba shouldn't have been playing, you know, such a vicious character. I mean, what do you, that the acting was weak, and tell me who then was weak in what they depicted in a Western? I mean, is it the same criticism you have for Clint Eastwood and his spaghetti Westerns, you know, John Wayne and, you know, cleaning up the West with Indians, you know? So tell me, you know, in comparison, where the criticism lies. And there is no comparison, because this is the only time there's ever been something to use as a comparison. And I just don't think it's fair, therefore, to throw that criticism out there when it's like one movie against hundreds and thousands of movies that have come across two centuries. You know, but the 60s, where the movies started hitting the screen, you know, black themed movies like The Mac or Shaft or what were some of the other ones? With my boy Ron O'Neill. What was Superfly. His big movie back? Superfly. You know, which was an incredible Curtis Mayfield soundtrack. You know, these movies, you know, across 110th Street, Yaphet Kotto, you know, these movies were giving black folks the opportunities to, and I think Bill Duke, you know, somewhere along the way, like Yaphet Kotto, I think they started wanting to, because they realized roles were far and in between, they started to want to develop their skills behind the camera. But what happened was these movies were showing, like, Jim Brown. I mean, like, man, Jim Brown was hard on white people, especially white women. And it's like, oh, now we can't have this, you know. I mean, this is black folks' stuff. So it's like, so then white media picked up on that, and they started calling them blaxploitation movies, meaning we were being drawn in to see these movies of black people that really didn't have our black values in mind. They were just throwing these things on the screen just to rob us of our money, and they were taking advantage of us and our hunger just to see movies and black people on the screen. Well, how hypocritical can that be? But unfortunately, black media bit on it, and suddenly there was a shutdown, you know, of this production of black movies. Well, what happened was more than twofold. It was multifold. That meant not only now that were black actors limited in the roles that were available, and again having to compete, you know, with the dominant cultures that were producing movies out of Hollywood, but also black directors, black, you know, screenwriters, black producers, you know, even developing black productions like Screen Gems or whatever, all them, you know, you see about maybe four or five co-producers whenever movies come out now. That means that it was a shared expense. You know, MGM didn't have to do it alone. Paramount didn't have to do it alone. You know, now they had the shared expense of other production agencies wanting to get their mark in. So they're investing in the big dogs. But black folks didn't have a chance to develop that. So now 60 years later, you and I, because of the criticism of blaxploitation and black people buying it, we're seeing the same things now being shown that were being shown in the 60s. But now, because it's so far behind the time, we're considered harmless in what we do. So you see people whose history was denied them and denied me on the screen today, I have a hard time getting excited about it because it depresses me most of the time. But I am excited about the fact that you get to see it. You know, Hidden Figures. 12 Years a Slave, in a sense, because my man, you know, won his freedom. But, you know, I did a little research about him after the movie, right? And it's not exactly what you call a happy ending. Because my man, what was his name? Northup, Solomon Northup. You know, after he, you know, returned to his family and all that, was like, that's very tear rendering, you know. But after regaining his freedom, Northup disappeared in 1857 during a trip to Canada. He had become known as he became a well-known speaker, speaking out against slavery. He was a abolitionist, you know, like so many of the Northern and many of the controversial Southern leaders were. You know, John Brown, you know, was an abolitionist as an example. But, and I guess you could even say in some ways Abraham Lincoln was. But what happened, you know, he disappeared. And nobody knows what happened to him in 1857. You know, some say he was sold back into slavery, and others say he was just killed. And, you know, his reign remains done away with. So that's like the lingering part of the history that the story doesn't fully tell, because 1857, how many times have we said the 1800s, especially around the mid-1800s, is so much about the way the hub of America revolves around and its distortion of truth. So we don't get these link-ins, but we get the stories as late as they may come. It's exciting to see you get it, but it's depressing for me to see that they're only coming near the end of my life. You know, like this movie Patton as another example. You know, George C. Scott, great role, great everything, movie. But you didn't hear anything about the Black Panthers, the original Black Panthers. That was the tank company that spearheaded Patton's tank corps that spearheaded the charge into Europe. You know, maybe one day, hopefully before I die, people will read and hear about the Black Panthers. But it hadn't happened yet. Yeah, and to even bring it up, it's that same kind of skeptical eye that I think you're speaking about, that people raise when you talk about the value of a movie like The Harder They Fall. Yeah, some people would even go so far as to say, man, you're making too big of a deal of it. It's only a movie. Totally. Yeah, but movies have greatly influenced the culture of American society, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking about earlier, movies, dancing, entertainment. I was just thinking back to, like, the times when we didn't have these opportunities, when we were just slaves and we didn't have these chances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just slaved for a living.
We just slaved.
Right.
Right. We dealt with, you know, cotton picking depression.
Yeah. Sore backs.
Yeah. No, but we had those opportunities through song and dance and things like that to pass down these true stories without white America, you know, without the owners, the slave masters knowing about it. You know, so even though it's just a movie, I felt like this was still an opportunity, even through entertainment, to, you know, give a different interpretation, stretch the truth. But I mean, most of Hollywood is about stretching the truth in the first place, you know, but here's this opportunity to really provide something that a lot of people didn't know about. And I think that was the whole point. But
Yeah. And I agree with you too. It's exciting even to have the conversation.
Yeah,
that's something that's new to the foray, to even have these, you know, back and forth about. I know it's happened in this house. We watched, you know, the movie together, and it generated dialogue and conversation that bridged the gap of generations. You know, I found that exciting. You know, and even if there would be, which it wasn't in this house, but even if it would be some negative commentary, it's like, great. That's what America's always done with its own movies anyway. All we need is just more movies that, you know, give us the opportunity to do that instead of expecting one movie every generation to capture the total thing of all black people. I think that's a little unfair. I don't know. I might be wrong.
I wonder if, you know, what other people of color have these kind of discussions because we're all entertained. We all love our movies. I don't care where you come from, what color you are. You know, if you're Mexican, I know you enjoy your movies. Sue and I watch Mexican movies all the time, and we talk about some of the similar issues that I see as Black American in Hollywood and what she has to deal with and see as far as Mexican portrayal in movies. You know. Asians and how they're portrayed in movies. I know everybody, you know, and it's like, oh, it's good to see that. So we talked about Black Panther and you know, Chadwick showing everybody that, yeah, this black dude can be a lead and be a superhero. You know, then they just had this other movie, you know, with an Asian lead. And they're like, oh, my God, this is so good. You know, so here we have this opportunity for, I think, something very similar, you know, with The Harder They Fall, similar to Black Panther, kind of opening the doors, if you will. Kind of the doors are already open, but it kind of busts open a little bit more for proper representation of what America really looked like, and not based on what they say it looked like. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, though, just for the sake of well, not necessarily accuracy's sake, but just for the sake of Black Panther, you know, it took a major leap in the fantasy world of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Harder They Fall, to me, took a super leap in historical facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the movie itself wasn't, you know, based on true stories, but it was full of characters that really lived.
Yeah.
You know, and that point you made earlier, that provides, you know, that beautiful opportunity for, let me find out who this person was, because I was never told about him. I'm just saying that's the general, you know, conversation, like, oh, you know, that's a bunch of crap. That person didn't really live. And then, you know, it's like, well, let's look it up, because we can look. I mean, there's, you know, the information cycle, this machinery out here gives us push-button opportunities and access to information that we can even, you know, sit down with our kids today and say, hey, but just enter this name, push this button, and look at what comes up. It's like, wow, yeah. You mean, you know, if we ever got into the habit of doing that, you know, it's like, and then being able to have that kind of conversation about who that person was, and the time frame that they lived in, and what it was like in America at that time. That's, to me, the real cutting edge. And I think that the movie was made to drive home a point of controversy. You know, I don't think it was an accident that, you know, these folks had these names. And can I give you just one example, Will?
Yeah.
Or did I... I mean, I didn't want to take you off stride, you know.
I'm good.
I was, like I said before, how much I love the show, because it allows me to play around with information historically. I was curious about Cuffy.
Mm.
Don't ask why, you know, and I'm not going to talk about the character in the movie,
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to give away the movie for anybody, but I was curious about that character. So I said, let me just see if there's anything at all about Cuffy. Well, doggone.
Yeah.
I don't know what this had to do with the movie, but it inspired me because of the name to just look it up. Cuffy was an escaped slave in Jamaica who led other runaway slaves to form a community of free black people in the island's forested interior. They were known for raiding white plantation owners at the end of the 18th century. Now, you know, Cuffy, or Cuffy spelled in two different ways, or Coffee, is the first name, you know, that's this, and surname recorded in African American culture, believed to be derived from the language name Kofi, K-O-F-I, meaning born on Friday. This was noted as one of the most common male names of West African origin, which was retained by some American slaves. So Cuffy had, even though, you know, wow, that's really cool, you know. Not wanting to get into the character in the movie. But to find out there's some, I just don't think that's coincidence that it had its score. I don't think they came up with a name and a spelling off the top of their hat. I think that was based on something. You know, I got to believe that. I can't believe this is, you know, just a coincidence of writing, you know, not when it has such a, you know, an extensive history. So that's the kind of stuff, you know, even to be able to read it right now and to say it and exchange it, you know, with others as we do. You know, that you know, to me is yeah, that's pretty doggone cool. You know, that's weird. And I could go right on down the list, but I will say this, at some future date, you know, forthright, meaning coming in the near future, I would like to do, like we did with Stagecoach Mary, I would like to also do it with Bass Reeves. You know, it's a fascinating story, you know, fascinating character at a time of American history lost to history.
One of the other people I came across in my own research around Cuffy was a woman named, and I don't know if it's Kathy Williams or Cathay Williams, C-A-T-H-A-Y.
Okay.
And her name popped up, and I couldn't find the original article that her name came up in, but I think that she was this person influenced some of the character and how she portrayed Cuffy. Now, Miss Williams here was an African-American soldier who enlisted in the Army under the synonym William Cathy, or Cathay, C-A-T-H-A-Y. She was the first black woman to enlist and the only documented woman to serve in the United States Army posing as a man during the American Indian Wars. So I think that she was just an influence to the character because of her portrayal in the movie.
Amen.
I thought,
right on.
I thought about your boy and the Good Lord Bird. That character as well. I'm glad that you brought up Cuffy. And again, this is just through research, you know, and again, some of the things that we're getting back into during the show, that I came across this name, who I didn't even know about, the first African-American woman.
Well, exactly.
In the U.S. Army, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Point being right there. Right? Yeah. I didn't even know about. This is what I find exciting, that it would stir up this kind of dialogue. You know, we could sit around and we could poke holes at the movie. That's all we want to do. Or we could take a look at the characters and talk about them from a historical perspective. That, you know, to me, you know, in the circle of my peers, I would find very exciting to do. But, of course, my peers would have to be encircled by the same passion for Westerns. Otherwise, you know, oh man, who wants to talk about that? That's a Western, you know. And so, you know, it has to be that common theme, you know, of Westerns comparison. I've been inundated, you know, by white male dominant Westerns that throw, you know, black male characters in and black female characters in for a little flavor. But rarely, if ever, are they the lead. You know, I have a feeling that even the remake of The Magnificent Seven with Denzel playing, I forget his name in the movie, I have a feeling his role was based on Bass Reeves. But I'm going to have to go back and, which is really a chore, right, to have to go back and watch him in the remake of Magnificent Seven to be accurate about my reasons for saying, oh, yeah, man, you know, I'm being facetious, you know, right now too, because like that was a joy watching that, and I'll tell you why. And if y'all haven't seen the remake of Magnificent Seven, well, you might not want to hear the next thing I'm saying if you're planning on seeing it, because it's a spoiler alert. You know, I think the most exciting part about that movie with these seven dudes, right, is that of the seven, that the four that got killed, you know, the three that survived was a black man, a Mexican, and an Indian. Nah, that makes me stand up and applaud, you know, so, you know, right on for that. And I cannot, because, you know, your boy Fuqua, you know, directing it and knowing that, not knowing, but assuming that him and Denzel probably have a good relationship, you know, I cannot believe that was an accident. Yeah, anyway, you know, I mean, so, yeah, even though everybody, you know, you ain't going to find another black person in the movie. That's all right. You know, Denzel dominates the screen. But, yeah, that's the kind of conversation that may be hard to come by, to be able to get into the historical perspectives of the harder they fall. But the premise of it all is still exciting to me. Posse, well, you know, I thought Posse was a crummy movie, period. And I thought it had the potential of being so much more into the history, but it went to the entertainment. Okay, you know, but I was glad to see, you know, Mario Van Peebles having an opportunity to, you know, show off his craft, you know, coming from such a, you know, a great father who never really got his props here in America, but that's all right. You know, America wasn't ready for Melvin Van Peebles. I don't even think Black America was. You know, Al's brother definitely thought out the box, you know, and I love him for it. But, you know, so, you know, we're hard-pressed to find Western that are. And I, you know, like, now, there was a movie in the 60s called Sergeant Rutledge. Very controversial movie. But, again, the lead character, Woody Strode, you know, and led, you know, the Buffalo Soldiers. And, you know, he was arrested and accused of raping and murdering a white girl and defended by a white, you know, defense counsel, Jeffrey Hunter. Of course, Jeffrey Hunter's story was more about the movie than Sergeant Rutledge's story. But that's okay because, you know, it was still about, you know, Sergeant Buffalo and the fact that his soldiers really looked up to him. And Woody Strode was an imposing figure on the screens back in the late 50s and early 60s. But still, it was not a dominant black cast, you know. Now, as far as Westerns go, I just really find the theme behind the movie, The Harder They Fall, as being doggone exciting for what it could potentially stir up in the near future. You know, so I don't know how you feel about that, man, but that's where I am with it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Totally. So, again, we thought it was a good movie. Definitely should check it out. What do you like most, or what are you some things that you see, like just looking at the, we talked about the changes and the plight that Black Americans had to go through with representation in Hollywood. I mean, change is slow. You know,
yeah.
But you know, I was going to say, do you think it's too slow?
Yeah.
And how serious? How serious? If anything, do you think, you know, we should take? Should we not take it seriously anymore? Is it just a movie? It's just entertaining, or should we still look at utilizing these opportunities to change the way we were taught?
Well, let me ask you this. Let me put you on the spot.
Okay.
How important do you think it is for your story to be told?
How important do I think? Yeah, I'm like, my story.
Yeah. And so there's my question in general, you know, to the general pop. How important do you think it is for your story to be told? You know, if you yourself, I feel a little bit, you meaning, you know, you in plural, not you personally. But if you feel a little bit, you know, like we did the show, you know, write your own book club, right? And, you know, folks like wanting to really tell their story but feeling a little shy or intimidated or fearful to do it for others to read for whatever the fears are. Okay, so my question is, you know, how important is it for you to have your story to be told? So if you're not telling your story, who will? And here,
right.
Herein lies the rub. Our history has been told by others, you know, whether it's been in book form, whether it's been on TV or movies. And see, that's not been the issue for the dominant culture. They pretty much show whatever they want to show. There were two movies that came out in the late 1990s, I think it was. It might have been even earlier than that, but I think it was the 1990s. Two movies, The Untouchables and Color. And I think that was the 1990s. You know, Kevin Costner and, you know, The Untouchables. And there was a whole lot of black actors in colors that we didn't know were going to wind up being kind of, you know, famous, you know, like my boy Don Cheadle, you know, Rocket. You know, I watched that movie the other night. It's like, but anyway, my point being, so here's these two movies. Now, Colors, right? Raw Dog, right out of L.A., Crips and Bloods, you know, and just Raw Dog movie. I mean, and Cops versus Crips and Bloods and a few others thrown in. But, you know, so that meant pretty much, you know, cops and black people. You know, so that's the new Cowboys and Indians. Arrest me. I'm still going to say it. So now we're watching this movie, and, you know, like the cops are the heroes and the Crips and the Bloods, you know, they're the villains, you know. And the Crips and the Bloods are, you know, dressed in their colors, you know, colors. And, of course, the cops in L.A. are the cops. We ain't talking about whether the cops are corrupt right now. We're talking they're doing battle with these heathens, you know, these black gangs. And then you look at a movie like Untouchables. Now, here's the same movie shown from a different scene. Al Capone is Crips and Bloods, but Al Capone is white. You know, Elliot Ness is fighting Al Capone. Elliot Ness is white. So Elliot Ness, his wardrobe is Armani. And, you know, Al Capone's wardrobe is, you know, down and dirty too, you know. So it's like, we're cleaning up the same issue, fast forward a few decades. The same thing that white gangsters were doing in the 20s and 30s is the same issue that people are painting such a distorted view of black gangs, you know, in the 20th and 21st century. But it's the same thing that white gangs were doing in the 20s, you know. Whether they be, you know, pure European, whether they be white, whether they be Italian, whether they be mafia, whatever they are, you know, they're controlling the trafficking of alcohol and other drugs and all of the other corruptions, you know, prostitution and whatever, you know. But the common, you know, the common bond of the two generations is that they were feeding off the misery of black people. But you're not seeing the same things being told in the same way, and that's what Hollywood can play with and tamper with. You know, and that's what, you know, actors get to play these roles, and we see a Kevin Costner or we see a what's my boy's name? Robert De Niro in all these various roles, right? But we don't get to see a Don Cheadle in the same number of roles, you know, over the same period of time as these guys were provided the opportunity. And I think that's what people miss. They miss the fact that screenwriting produces this role that is given to those who the producers feel will best turn a profit. So they turn to the more famous actors who are going to take these roles because they're written so well. And it's easy to act a role that's written well. All you got to do is read and memorize. And if you're polished in your skill, then your acting speaks for itself. Black folks have not been given those kind of roles. They don't get the kind of screenwriting, and therefore they don't get the production behind them. So they have to depend on the piecemeal that comes down through the funnel. And that's why, again, here I go with, you know, coming back to the harder they fall. There's going to come a time, even in American society, where black athletes are going to have to make pretty much the same decision. The way politics in America is going right now, black athletes pretty soon aren't going to be allowed the luxury of straddling the fence. They're going to have to decide if they really want to still perform before a racist government or not. You know, they're going to have to decide if it's worth, you know, selling themselves, you know, to the highest bidder, just so they can continue to perform for only those who will be able, you know, to afford to even go watch them perform in the arena, in the Coliseum, you know, and that's something that, you know, they're going to have to reckon with pretty soon. It's the sign of the times, you know, as far as American society is concerned, that the themes of racism have never left us. It's only just now being depicted so clearly. So there's no getting around it right now. There's going to have to come a reckoning of choosing sides. And if black athletes decide to do what so many black entertainers are edging toward doing, pooling those resources and combining the influence, first of all, popularity, and what they can finance, oh, yeah, you're going to really see a change of hope quickly in Black America. And, of course, that's the fear. Yeah, and so I don't know, again, if I'm touching on what you're asking, but my hope is in those who have yet to be identified with the resources there if the combined structure of investment follows the need. I'm not talking about something that can be tax written off by your agent, you know, who for the most part is white. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about where you decide where you're going to invest your money and you decide how it's going to do the greater good, not as one or two people, but as a collective. You know, it's almost like a Black union of athletes deciding to come together and dictate how their influence is going to be highlighted and marketed and spent. That, you know, that's what I'm hoping to be the difference between the Civil War of the 21st century, 21st century, yeah, as opposed to the Civil War of the 19th century. You know, there were slaves then. They're athletes now. You know, they got clout now. They didn't have so much clout or any clout then. You know, they depended on white people. You know, I mean, it was a white Congress, all Republican, you know, that dominated the push to free slaves, regardless of the other agenda. You know, still it was white man against white man, you know, and the white Republicans won as far as what led to, you know, the changing of the Constitution of the time. Well, you know, yeah, we got a fairly decent representation in Congress, but nothing like with black athletes' influence. You know, we know all this stuff that's going on, yet most of the people who go to football games and basketball games and even baseball games, they're mostly white. They're the ones paying for the salaries. They're cheering these folks. I want to see how much they cheer when LeBron James says, I'm tired of what you're doing to my people. We already saw what they did to Colin Kaepernick. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if there had been a boycott of all athletes of color insisted that my man be given his job back if they weren't going to play until he was? Wouldn't that have been a wonderful thing? That's where power resides, you know, when you can exercise the kind of power that shuts down the financial machine that drives American society. Oh, you see a rapid change. But as long as people are content to say, you know, change comes slowly, but it comes, you know, it comes steady. As long as people are going to continue to buy that, you know, the dominant controlling factor of white America is always going to be able to continue to do what it's always done because it loves the fact that we can be satisfied with moving slowly. You know, the slower we move, the quicker they can change the rules. And it constantly is showing us that over and over again. So I like the idea, you know, of black entertainers starting to produce movies, man. Because you can bet they produce them, and their counterparts star in them. I like that. You know, and Idris Elba. I don't think that brother's from America. But I don't see too many people, you know, complaining about his skill. You know, so. Anyway, well, I'm sorry, man, for going on and on with this, man. You just got me cranked up when you first talked about tonight's show, man.
Well, I was hoping so. You know, I know some people might be listening like this isn't typical, because this is a little different, I think. This isn't like, it is a little similar to things that we've talked about, but it's a little different too, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and, but the point is that, that it is different, but we're still able to talk about and touch on points that we've talked about in the past. And it's still, and it all comes down to the ability for you and I to project our voice, and as you said before, provide a different voice, but an opportunity to discuss these things that we're missing out on, and to provide these generational gaps in these discussions with you and I, and hopefully other people can talk about other stuff as well. So, you know, it's just a little cool. So no reason to apologize for going on, because I knew it was going to crank you up. And like I said, I grew up
a lot,
watching. I feel
complimented, man. Thank you.
I'm sitting there with my mad scientist coat on, like, ha, 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 ha. It worked, you know.
Yeah. Do I see you got a caller in the queue? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, we sure do. We have a caller in the queue. Hey, good evening. Thanks for calling the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Ah! My hero!
It's so good to hear you guys back, man. I missed you guys so much.
Man, we've missed you, man. I haven't had anybody to rag.
Well, now I'm going to give you your chance.
No, man. I already messed up with your pops. I ain't hardly come messed up with you. Not 2 weeks in a row, man. I won't have nowhere to go for the holidays.
Man, you can always come here. I've been trying to get Lil Bill to come out here for about 2 years now, and he keeps saying, you know,
next year,
beatboxing me. Yeah.
Hey, Adam, man, it's good to hear your voice, man. Right.
Good to hear you guys too. I just wanted to touch on or ask a question or touch on two different points that you had made. One, just about Idris Elba, and I haven't seen the whole movie yet, and I'm gonna watch it tomorrow. But how you were saying that nobody was complaining about him, but wasn't he supposed to or potentially supposed to play the new 007? And people lost their mind.
Yeah, yeah. That's
like
the,
there
that,
can't
that's,
be a black James Bond.
Why not? He's British. but we've made him American, right?
Yeah.
That's what's trippy about all this, man.
I think it's unfortunately, you know, the society that we live in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the way things are. And I don't know how good of a quarterback Colin Kaepernick was,
mm-hmm.
but if he was, like, let's say if he was on, you know, Tom Brady's level or Randall
uh-huh.
Cunningham or Donovan McNabb, do you think more people would have rallied around him if he was, you know, like Mike Vick, or if he was a star quarterback that could do things and wasn't just kind of okay?
I think what's amazing is that, to me, I thought he was the star quarterback. I thought that, you know, he surpassed some of those quarterbacks you mentioned. You know, no disrespect
to
those guys, but to me, he was that dude, you know. But, America,
I agree.
America felt betrayed. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. How dare you?
Yeah,
like, after everything we've done.
He strikes me as being what Ali was, you know, at the same point in his career, you know, at what could have been the peak of his greatness, his opportunities were snatched from him because he had the audacity to insult, you know, the themes of American society that I still don't understand why it's even played before a football game in the first place. You know, it's a football game. You know, what does that have to do with the national anthem? It's a football game. But that's another argument for another time. But, no, I agree with you, man. I think Colin Kaepernick was on his way. He was already equal to those guys. Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, of course, you know, arrested for dog violence. You know, okay, oh, my God. You know, Randall Cunningham, you know, never really developed his skill because Randall Cunningham. But Colin Kaepernick, you know, remember what he did achieve for the time he was with San Francisco. He was what you see. What's the boy out of Kansas City? What's his name?
Oh, Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, he was him before him. You know, he was Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson. You know, he was the brother out of Houston, Watson, before Watson.
Yep.
You know, but.
Yep.
You know, we didn't get a chance to see that, you know, in its fullness. the opportunity was robbed from him, you know. And so anyway,
his career was snuffed out with swords.
Yeah, but I think the one thing you did say, you know, Tom Brady or Brett Favre or what's your boy out of New Orleans, man? Drew Brees.
Oh, Drew Brees.
Know,
yep. Peyton Manning.
You know, now, yeah, how long do you think football would have tolerated these guys being, you know, denied an opportunity to return to the field? You think the football citizenry was sat still for that?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And one of the worst things is that, at least from what I've heard, initially when Kaepernick, what he would do is he would sit on the bench instead of stand. And he was talking to one of his teammates who was in, I believe he was in the Army. And he's like, you know, it's disrespectful to sit. So he's like, okay, well, what should I do? Or how can I do it where it's not disrespectful to you when you're serving?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they said, kneel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
him
and his white
teammate, they knelt.
Yeah.
But still everyone took it the wrong way, or everyone got, you know, all bent out of shape about it.
Or didn't take it the wrong way, took it consistent with the way it is in America. You know, let's compare one other thing, and you're right about another point. The veterans of America had no problem with what Colin Kaepernick did. Matter of fact, they said that's why they fought the wars they fought, was so that
yep.
we had the right to, you know, to defend our rights. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, that's what he was defending, his rights. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
Take a Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow
mm-hmm.
did the exact same thing. He knelt while the national anthem was being played in protest of legalizing abortion. Nobody
okay.
said a word.
Yep.
Nobody said a word. Nobody even brings that up. He knelt before Kaepernick did about his – that was his way of rebelling against the idea of legalizing abortions. But that doesn't even come up in the conversation.
I never even knew that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. He wasn't
anything in football, you know.
Yeah.
But he sure got a whole lot of print. You know, he
yeah.
sure got a whole lot of hype. Because unfortunately,
because
that print and that hype didn't make him skilled. You know, but nobody even brings that up, and not a word was said about. He did not get kicked off the team that he was trying out for. They're still trying to get him in football. They tried
yep.
to get him in baseball. You know, they tried
yep.
to do – well, y'all don't know who Bobby Douglas was. You know, he was a running quarterback for the Bears. You know, Bobby Douglas could throw, but unfortunately there was never anybody there. So he made his mark by running. You know, so he was the first 1,000-yard rushing quarterback in the NFL. You know, so I guess he was trying to
Willie
catch
Gaunt
the balls.
There.
Well, Willie Gaunt came at a time when Jim McMahon, you know, that was a different era. That was a totally different
yeah.
Bear era. Yeah. But no, Bobby Douglas was running like he was trying to catch the balls he was throwing. But they tried to turn him into baseball because he could throw so hard and he could throw so far. You know, but, you know, you're either good at something or you're not, you know. And media, everybody's, you know, the bottom is full of people that are mediocre. But my point is, you know, like Tim Tebow was kind of like on that Bobby Douglas level, but at a time when running quarterbacks, and that's all they could do was run, was not a popular idea. You know,
yeah.
so, and it's, but they're still trying to get him a job in professional sports. I think he's playing in Canada somewhere right now. But, you know,
okay. But
then you draw a comparison between the two. And, yeah, I know Colin Kaepernick got a great, you know, settlement with the NFL that probably part of his agreement was that he couldn't tell anybody what the real amount was. And, you know, I'm glad the brother got paid. You know, but that's not the point. You know, that's not the point at all, to me anyway. You know, the point
yeah.
is being it should have never been an issue where a settlement had to be made. And what's that all about? Anyway, you know, is that the way we do? We just, you know, we buy off our wrongs? Well, yeah, that's the American way, right? Anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead on, man. I'm sorry. You got me cranky.
I also love your I loved your comparison between Colors and the Untouchables, and I need to go back and watch both those movies again.
Yeah, yeah, it's trippy, man. It's really trippy. You know, it. I mean, because it came out at the same year. It's not like it was a great, you know, time lapse between the two. No, two came out the same year, and look at the difference. One was so clean in its violence, and the other was grimy, you know, man.
Mm-hmm.
And all we have to do is look at the warring factions. It wasn't about, you know, even though it should have been about, it wasn't about the war between the Bloods and the Crips. It was about the L.A. Police Service, you know, in war against the two gangs and all the other supplemental gangs. You know, that's, you know, it was like the cavalry was being overwhelmed by all of these Indian tribes at this place called Little Bighorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm tripping, man. Y'all's fault.
No. But okay, if I can ask one more question, then I'll let you guys go. I apologize. But have you seen American Gangster? And what's your thoughts on that movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a whole lot of people who think that was a fictitious character.
Oh, no.
You know, Frank Lucas was real.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of people don't because, again, see, I mean, there's even folks who know about Nicky Barnes and they know about Bumpy Johnson and they know about, you know, the Black Godfather. But what they don't know about is what nobody's – when did Frank Lucas come to – that wasn't a name that went along with all these other names. That's another piece of American history. We can't, you know, show that it was this black dude who outsmarted, you know, everybody in being able to produce the same product without a middleman, you know, and be able to use the armed service to do it. Well, we can't show that. Oh, my God. Well, though, you know, it's okay for the rest of the white gangsters to do it, but we can't show this, you know, this brother figuring how to do that, you know. So, yeah, now, again, for the same reason, violent movie, you know, no question about it. You know, but it's like, you know, black on black as far as it's, you know, it's predatory scene. Still had a basis of history, you know, that to me was worthy of recognition. You know, it makes it even more poignant to me that this whole scene could even be done by somebody black under the radar screen, as opposed to somebody white who does it in wide open. Dutch Schultz, you know, Lucky Luciano. I mean, you know, these characters are like a part of American lore. Well, Frank Lucas should be up there with them.
Oh, absolutely.
In my opinion. Yeah.
And like the one with I can't even remember. The guy that was an FBI agent who went undercover with the mob. Can't remember the movie.
Talking about the one with Al Pacino.
No, but it's Serpico. Not about.
Yeah. You're not talking about Black Klansman.
Frank Hill. Frank Hill was the mobster. But yeah. Oh yes, because Al Pacino brought him in. What was that movie?
I don't know.
Al Pacino brought him in under him. I'm sorry. I just can't think of the name of that movie.
That's all right. Come back and tell us next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After you've done your homework. And give us your report on it.
You talking about Donnie Brasco?
Yes.
I didn't know nobody black was in that.
That's what you were talking about, Adam?
That was a movie I was talking about. I wasn't talking about if there are black people in there or not, but that was just one of other movie I was talking about.
I'm sorry.
You know, about the gangsters and the cops and everything. And
shows
just
you
how
where my mind is. I was going through my files of black gangster movies. My bad. Sorry, man.
But you know, you look at it like American Gangster, right? Like you said, Frank Lucas. Like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know? And all these other movies where it kind of makes you like, you know, who was this person? Who are they talking about?
Yeah.
Even Hidden Figures. Like a lot of people didn't know who these women represented in Hidden Figures. So, you know,
And they didn't show up in, you know, like one of my favorite movies was The Right Stuff. And then I watched this movie and I'm go back and watch the right stuff, and, well, where are they? You know, he ain't finding them anywhere in the control room. Nowhere. All white dudes. You know, there's something wrong with this. But I didn't know it till it was shown. That's what I mean. See, that's where my issue is. I'm discovering the same thing you are discovering. That's not how it was supposed to be. I should have known these things. And then you all could ask me, man, is that accurate? You know, and because history being known, we could have that conversation. Not we're asking each other these questions we're asking tonight. You know, I mean, that's an insult, man. That's even beyond an insult. That's a big insult.
But you don't know what you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Okay, that's fine. That's kind of like we could agree to disagree. You know, my point is that there's no excuse for not knowing it. That's the point I'm trying to make. And when these things come to light, it should cause a great uproar. And I like, to me anyway, I like the idea that a great uproar I saw represented in the harder they fall. It's like, this is the way we're going to deal with this. You know, this is the way we're going to present it. First, we're going to take a genre that much of America loves, Western. And then we're going to impose upon America with this Western that's going to have black stars in it. You know, and the only white folks you're going to get in it are the stereotypes. They're going to be the bank people. They're going to get robbed. But I'm giving too much of the movie away. But, you know, if you like Westerns and if you watch this because it's going to have some of your favorite people in it, you know, you're going to get a shock that black America has been so conditioned by it don't even shock them anymore not to see themselves on the screen. You know, that's the conversation to me that is leveling the playing field that we're having it at the same time from having seen it at the same time. That is revealing for all of us at the same time a particular outlet, a movie that has done it, you know, that has combined a lot of cross-generational dialogue, man. I'm digging this.
And you know, before we still got a few minutes left, but before I just want to make this clear. I just want to make this other point clear. Now, I'm not going to speak for Dad, but I think it's safe to say he feels this way too. Now, we're not saying that we're just supposed to just be quiet and appreciate a film because it's got a bunch of black people in it. I mean, we appreciate it, but we know that there's still some responsibility that comes with it as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And again, absolutely. We haven't seen movies that are completely accurate. You mentioned The Untouchables. Frank Nitti didn't get tossed off the roof by Elliot Ness. You know, that dude killed himself. You know, in the alley. You know, so. So,
you know,
Hollywood
perfect
is special.
Example,
that's what
man.
They do.
And Elliot Ness himself was an idiot who eventually committed suicide. You know, so he wasn't the main thrust of it, you know. Actually, that guy, the Sean Connery character, he was actually a real person. He really was a part of the Untouchables. But, you know, not Malone like we saw in the movies, but he really was. Right. But, yeah, your point being made, but, you know.
Yeah, like we're not just saying, we should just sit and enjoy it just because black people are not. You know, so, again, we know that there's a responsibility as well. You know, but, there's the question, too. You know, do we do ourselves a disservice, if you will, by not wanting to see the best that we have to offer? And I think some people just have this huge expectation of it being presented. Number one, it's on Netflix, and it's not like it was a series. I mean, even the Harriet Tubman movie, I thought should have been a series and not a movie. There's only so much you can present in 2 hours anyway. But, you know, as I mentioned, should we do ourselves a disservice not wanting to see the best, or should we just, you know, say just get props or whatever for bad or mediocre stuff, and then they just make bad and mediocre stuff? Absolutely not. We should expect the best. You know, if I go to a black-owned restaurant, I expect my food
good
to be
good.
I expect good service, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to go there and just say, it's okay if the chicken's not cooked all the way, if I don't even tell people thank you. Oh,
if,
hell no.
If it's still clucking. If it's still clucking when I'm sticking with a fork.
I got to wring the neck a little bit more. Yeah, get out of here, man.
So what if I got a mouth full of feathers? It's black old. These are black feathers.
That's on the table right there.
But it's good. That's good. I mean, man, look, you know, I am not a Tyler Perry fan, and I am not ashamed to admit that. I do not like the way he depicts black men, you know, and so that's where I am. However, I have a friend who would and who did criticize me for not supporting our own, you know, by going to see his movies. Well, I watch his movies, but I watch them on cable just
yep.
to say I watch them. But I ain't dropping a buck. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not going to treat it like, because I don't like the theme of his movies. And, you know, so we could, but I would have no problem arguing, like I just stated. I'm giving the reason why. Now,
yeah.
somebody can argue, you know, that that's it. Well, then let's have that discussion. I don't have any problem with that, you know. But at the same time, I'm not going to say I don't like his movies, but I have never seen them. You know, no. You know, I've watched them to give strength to my point of view. You know,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, there's people who love Tyler Perry movies. Okay. You know, now if you tell me, you know, like, well, not supporting his movies would deny black people the ability to develop their craft, I would just need to know what black people you're talking about other than him, you know, and then what is being denied. I mean, the guy produces movies like they're self-published, you know, but anyway, you know, so it's not like he's being boycotted. America eats up his movies, you know, so it seems like he's got a pretty strong following, you know, so he's
yeah.
got enough of his stuff out there, you know, that he can pretty much, you know, do a whole Madea series and not have to worry about a drop-off of people coming to see him. So anyway, you know, I'm saying all that, I hope, in piggybacking what Will said about it's not about you're just supposed to like this because, you know, it's got black people in it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No. And that's cool.
You know,
if you've got criticisms about it, if you got issues about it, okay. And we're not knocking anything about it. I mean, we have our opinions, you have your opinions. We're not trying to just say ours is the best opinion. You know,
but you know, show me a movie
right.
that holds my interest, and it's a movie I'm going to give a thumb up to. If it's a movie
yeah.
that holds my interest. If it's a movie I got to watch 3 or 4 times to get through it, well, if it's one of them what are those movies called? Like poltergeist horror movies?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to take me 3 or 4 times to get through them because, you
yeah.
know, I'm a pussy. I don't, you know, like it, you know, that one with the clowns. Oh, man, I got about 1/3 of the way through that shit. Nah, this is not a movie that's conducive with me being able to go to sleep at night. So I had to care that. You know, I ain't into ghost movies, you know, the kind that come through the walls and all that, nah, man. You know, I'm not talking about comedy ghost movies. I'm talking about, you know, like Poltergeist. Huh? Nah, nah. It took me 10 years before I watched that. And
nah,
then I only watched with the sound.
I still haven't seen Chi-Rack yet, man. And that's a movie. And I'm from Chicago. So.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, well, I haven't either.
And,
I haven't.
And I have no intention on saying that.
Yeah,
to you, so.
Yeah, I do. I do. Only because I want to, just like I had to see, you know, what was it, The Blood. You know, I had to watch it, you know. I had to watch it to be able to defend my point. Yeah. But anyway, man.
Yeah.
All right, y'all.
All right, so, great.
Hey, Adam,
it was great talking to you guys.
Adam, thanks for chatting in, man.
Absolutely wonderful, man, for you to call in. Thank you so much, man.
Yes, thank you guys again.
Amen.
Awesome.
All right, Wilfredo, land this airplane, man. Love you, son.
All right, love you too, Dad. So, again, Wednesday night, ladies and gentlemen, 7 p.m. Standard time. Catch us every Wednesday night here on Blog Talk Radio, and the shows are archived on your favorite platform. As always, we appreciate you. Tell a friend.
Whoa.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Be safe out there. Take care.
Yeah. He's not muted.